You and I back together again on a midweek Wednesday, November 9th, 2022, on Connecticut Today, where our midterm election coverage continued post-election. Former State Senate GOP leader John McKinney joined us to break down the Connecticut results, while former Time Magazine DC reporter Professor Alan Sanders offered his analysis on Tuesday's national election results. Let's stay with the local angle of what happened here in Connecticut. Joining us once again on the phones here, former Stratford GOP state senator and state senate Republican leader John McKinney, who you see Sundays 10:30 a.m. on News 8 on the TV version of the Capitol Report with Tom Dudchick and the other panelists. John, hey, it's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir, again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad. Well, John, I get kind of a rough night for the GOP last night, big night for Dick Blumenthal and for the governor. And I guess, John, these polls that showed it as a double-digit lead were kind of right. What do you think?
Well, yeah, it was a very good night for the Democrats across the state of Connecticut, not the night that Republicans were looking for. I think we saw nationally a lot of polls seem to be very off. But in Connecticut, most of the polling had Governor Lamont somewhere around 8 to 15 points. It looks like he ended up winning by 10 points. And so those numbers seem to be pretty accurate.
So, John, and I know you talk with the leaders and you talk with a lot of behind the scenes folks here. What is the future here for the GOP? Now, there are a lot of Republicans in the state. There are Republican areas around the state. But, you know, John, I just wonder, as we go on in the future here, is it just, and I've always said the math wins here, John, are we just looking at some demographic challenges that the Republican Party has to try and play into to at least become a force statewide again? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the math is a problem, obviously. There are, over 350,000 more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. But, Paul, Connecticut has always been a state. We have 40%, 41% of the people are not registered with a party. They're unaffiliated. And that's the voting block that decides elections in the state of Connecticut. Jody Rell, not that long ago, Paul, 2006.
Yeah.
Was elected overwhelmingly and was one of the most popular governors in the country. And she won because she was fiscally conservative, socially moderate, and people liked her. She cared about, she made people feel that she cared about them. And I think people see the same thing in Governor Lamont. All the polling showed 57, 58% likability and approval ratings. And I think the other thing that a lot of people missed about this election was that some of the polling also showed that Connecticut voters, 53-54%, thought Connecticut was on the right track.
Mm.
Well, if you're an incumbent governor and people like you and they think you're on the right track, you're going to win your reelection. I think what happens, unfortunately, our party is still kind of in an internal struggle. You know, are we a party of Donald Trump or are we a party of, say, the Jody Rell type Republicans? I think, and I'm very open about this, Donald Trump and his message don't win in Connecticut. Sure, there are pockets and places, say, in the Valley or in eastern Connecticut, mm-hmm. where he's more popular. But if we want to have a message that's going to resonate with people statewide, get those unaffiliated voters and some moderate Democrats, it has to be about fiscal responsibility. And it also has to be a message that's socially moderate and not extreme. I think, Paul, I think you look at some of the races, Greenwich, Connecticut, long believed to be a Republican town.
Mm-hmm.
Every single Democrat won in the town of Greenwich. And the Republicans lost all three state rep races. And they lost because their candidates were seen as too extreme. That is not Connecticut. Connecticut is not an extreme state.
But yet, John, and the guest is John McKinney from the Capitol Report, Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Channel 8, former state Senate Republican leader. But yet, John, and I talk to a lot of these people on the show and on my social media feeds, it is, they're frustrated, John, and they're Republicans and they're conservatives. But over the years, John, and doing shows like this here and at two or three other stations, gosh, John, I have the darndest time telling them it's okay to be a conservative. You can be a conservative with good values, but you have to modulate it. And some of the stuff you, not you, John, but you meaning people who tell me, some of the stuff that you tell me, folks, Walsh is really good in Georgia or Mississippi or Louisiana or Texas, but it just doesn't work up here. It just doesn't, and people are frustrated.
Well, I understand the frustration, but, you know, Paul, my message when I ran and my message since, when I'm talking to Republicans, when you're picking a candidate to run for the U.S. Senate, say Themis Claridis versus Leora Levy, when you're picking your candidates, choose the most conservative candidate who can win. And you can't forget the who can win part, because if you're simply going to say, well, this person is the most conservative, but they don't have a chance to win, what's the point? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, having more Republicans in the legislature, having a Republican governor, having a Republican U.S. senator is going to be better, even if the very conservative person agrees with them 75-80% of the time instead of 100% of the time. Because, you know, if you don't control any offices in Connecticut, you're not going to have any control over what's happening. And we've lost every constitutional office in Connecticut. We've lost maybe every congressional race. The 5th congressional district, I've looked at some new numbers about an hour ago, I believe is going to go to a recount. That race is going to be decided by 200-300 votes. But you need to win races. And that's just the reality. And too often, I heard from a lot of those people who are very conservative, people who didn't vote for me because I wasn't conservative enough. But at the end of the day, if we don't win, you're going to end up with someone who's far more liberal than, say, I would have been had I won.
And you know, John, and again, John McKinney is the guest. That's frustrating, John, because on this show and socially, I ask people, well, wait a minute. There was a time when Republicans, John, not too long ago, laughed at Democrats or laughed at liberals because, you people, you have such a narrow tent. You won't even entertain, for example, the idea of a pro-life Democrat, hearkening to when Bob Casey Sr. wasn't allowed to speak at the Democratic convention last year. Well, sadly, John, part of our party is becoming stuff that we used to laugh at the Democrats of, oh, you're litmus test people. Unfortunately, John, like you say, there's a lot of litmus test people on the Republican side. Now, they can be that way, John, but as I say, okay, but then you're not going to win.
Well, and I think that's frustrating for me in Connecticut, but it's even more frustrating for me as an American, Paul, because we're seeing the both parties move farther to the fringes, right? Farther to the right and farther to the left. You mentioned the pro-life issue. Last night in Texas, a Democratic Congressman Cuellar, who was challenged in a Democratic primary because he was pro-life, he actually won.
Yeah.
He's the last pro-life Democrat in the United States Congress. You can't get good policy if people aren't willing to negotiate and compromise and try to move forward on things if everybody's hardened into their positions and unwilling to move off of them. And I don't mean the life issue, because that's a very personal issue for a lot of people, but on other issues. So yes, our country and everybody is becoming increasingly polarized, and that's not good for, I think, ultimately for the state or the country, regardless of what party you're in.
And John McKinney, final question. You now look ahead to 2024. The next statewide race is going to be Chris Murphy's seat. You know, the state GOP is now 0-7 going into that. I'm not picking on leadership. Listen, you're only going to get people to run who want to run and maybe have the means. John, maybe, and I know this is far out, but it's really not, because the buzz has to start within 9 months or a year. Senate candidate versus versus Chris Murphy. I hope somebody from the legislature runs, a known name that doesn't have to spend so much money on name recognition. And, you know, maybe they can just get by with the citizen election money. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, unfortunately, we don't have the citizens election money for the U.S. House and Senate races, right? And, you know, Paul, one of the things I want to leave you with this thought, because if George Logan is able to pull it off and be elected as a Republican, that can be the beginning of really great changes for the Republican Party. Let me just briefly explain why.
Sure.
When Dan Malloy was elected as governor in 2010, I was the Republican leader in the state Senate and technically the highest ranking Republican in the state. I was unable to get statewide name recognition because the news media really isn't focusing on state legislators mm-hmm. individually. We had popular mayors in Democratic cities like Mark Boughton in Danbury, Aaron Stewart in New Britain, and you still can't get that statewide name recognition. Regionally, you can get name recognition, but not statewide. We haven't had that since we've had Republican congressmen, whether it's Nancy Johnson or Chris Shays, who lost in 2008. If we get a Republican congressman, we will have someone who will have the platform that the Democrats have, and that will help get our message out and will help all of the other Republicans as well.
So what do you say, John? You going for it or not? I'm sorry, I had to ask.
No. Listen,
you're done? You're done?
there was a time in my life, Paul, where I would have told you that the U.S. Senate is the greatest job in politics.
Yeah.
But I served 16 years in the state Senate. I was lucky to do it. But I think everybody's got their time. And 16 years was enough for me.
So. All right. And on that note, former state Senate Republican leader John McKinney from Stratford. John is on the Capitol Report Sundays at 10:30 on News 8. John, good to chat with you. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. Yeah, there was a time, if you remember, folks, especially you folks in Stratford, Bridgeport, that area, where John McKinney was considered, you know, a candidate A1 to maybe be the next Republican governor of the state or running for the Senate. But, you know, like John said, sometimes, you know, 16 years in Hartford, that's 8 terms. That's 8 campaigns. And a lot of times people step back and they say, enough. John, thanks. As we continue with our electoral post-game show, we can watch, we can talk about that. Previously, we told you a lot about what happened and went on around here with the Leora Levy defeat at the hands of Richard Blumenthal and Governor Ned Lamont easily winning another term last night. Let's shift gears a little bit more toward the national scene. You just heard from Dylan Richards and also from our network news folks. Interesting how this is being framed by Republicans and Democrats. One of our go-to guys, you know him, is Professor Alan Sanders, former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Professor Sanders, how are you, sir? Good to hear from you.
Very good. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm good. Boy, spinorama today, Professor, huh? One side or the other. It was great. It was horrible. No, it was horrible. It was great. What are your thoughts on last night?
Well, you got to take a look at the historical results and compare that to what happened yesterday. And looking at it, it looks pretty good for Democrats. Now, you know, ultimately, I think they're probably going to lose the House, and that certainly is going to hurt them in terms of, their plans and their agenda. But, you know, the average loss of House seats since 1934 was 28 House seats in midterm elections mm-hmm. and 4 Senate seats. In midterm elections. So the Democrats look like they're going to do better than that. That is to say, they're going to lose seats in the House very likely, and we yet don't know about the Senate. It's very likely that the Senate could just wind up where it's been, that is to say, a 50-50 draw. So if you look at it historically, the Democrats are breathing a huge sigh of relief. And because of that, they're spinning it as a victory of sorts. But the Republicans, of course, will have the numbers in the House, and that means that we are likely to have challenges to Biden and very likely a kind of gridlock situation in Washington. Now, the president just has held a news conference, mm-hmm. and he's outreached to the Republicans and said, look, I'm willing to compromise where we can. But he's also made clear that there are issues that he's not going to compromise on, such as Social Security, Medicare, climate change, and a couple of other items that he mentioned. So there is the possibility of compromise. There always is. But given the polarization of the country, I think gridlock and a kind of a stalemate in Washington is the more likely scenario going forward, at least in the near future.
And everybody was talking about, well, the economy polls so high, it likely, Professor, will blunt any impact from abortion or the presence of Donald Trump. And, you know, that may not have been the case last night. I haven't seen too many crosstabs. I'm still waiting for that, but that may not have been the case.
Yeah, well, you know, my take on it, and of course we have to get a little bit more analysis and results from polls and voter exit statements and so forth. I do think that the driving force was the economy, inflation in the economy. And that's why Republicans are favored to win the House, and the Senate, you know, remains a toss-up. I do think it was a driving force, but I do think there were two major breaking forces to that driving force, and that was abortion. Mm-hmm. And we know that it played a huge role in certain races at the gubernatorial level. We know there were referenda in Kentucky and I think Michigan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yes.
The abortion rights, basically, that side basically won. So I do think abortion was a major breaking element to the economic driving forces. And I also think that democracy and MAGA extremism were a major breaking forces in some key races. I mean, certainly in Pennsylvania, Mr. Mastriano, an extremist, lost rather decisively. I think also Fetterman versus Oz was a factor there in terms of candidate quality. I think Oz lost out on that. So democracy, candidate quality, MAGA extremism, I think was another breaking force. Now, the ultimate driving force was the economy, and many people said, look, we've got to put bread on the table, we've got to pay the rent and the mortgages. But these other issues braked that movement that was going toward the Republicans. That's why we have such close election results right now.
It is amazing, Professor, isn't it, that millions and millions and millions of votes cast, and I'm looking at the crawl here up on my monitor, and how many of these races are razor thin. Boy, we are divided, aren't we? And the thing is, we're not divided one quarter on one side and three quarters on the other. We're divided straight down the middle.
Yeah, I think that certainly is a fact of life. And so that's why it's so important, and we'll have to see whether the leaders, the Republican leaders as well as the Democratic leaders, realize that and say, look, there are some issues on which we're not going to agree on because they're philosophically deep divisions here. But are there things that we can agree on? And I think there certainly are. But we'll have to see whether there's leadership and courage to go there instead of just basically just, you know, throwing insults at one another and attacking the integrity. I mean, one of the things is you can disagree on policy.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that you have to disagree on the integrity of people and attack the integrity of people. Rational people can have different points of views. They're not the devil. They're not evil.
Yes.
They're just different points of view. We haven't gotten there yet. And our election, unfortunately, have been driven too much by, character assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than discussions, rational discussions on policy differences and whether there are bridges that can be built across some of those differences.
Former Time Magazine senior reporter in D.C., one of our go-to guys on politics nationally, Professor Emeritus Political Science at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, Professor Alan Sanders. Boy, Professor, it wasn't too long ago. Florida was considered a purple swing state. Ron DeSantis won it by a fraction of a point 4 years ago. And then the numbers last night, and I thought those were typos when I saw that. 20 points, he flipped Palm Beach County. He flipped Miami-Dade County. He did incredibly well for Republicans with voters of color, with Hispanic and Latino voters. Are we going to see a brawl here between the now DeSantis wing and the Trump wing?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I think Donald Trump declared war just a few days ago.
Yeah.
He was calling him Ron DeSanctimonious, if I recall correctly. He's aware that Ron DeSantis is a rising political star, and he certainly demonstrated that in Florida. And so I think, if you're Donald Trump, he suffered some very serious political wounds. I mean, in the general election, some of his candidates that he supported lost the general elections. And then within the Republican family, you've got Ron DeSantis, winning a decisive victory in Florida. You also have Governor Kemp winning re-election in Georgia. And Donald Trump, has not been too happy about Mr. Kemp. So whether he looks at the general election results or the results in the Republican within the Republican family, he's looking at wins by people who he does not like. I think for Donald Trump, that becomes an ego issue. And so whenever it becomes an ego issue for him, you can bet on a brawl. And I think right now the big brawl that is brewing and that we are likely to see expand in the coming months is between DeSantis and Trump. That's going to be really interesting to watch. And, you know, that will be played out. That will be played out in the Congress as well, because some of the members there are going to have to sort of balance whether they want to be seen as pro-Trump or whether they want to be seen as pro-DeSantis or even pro-Kemp, you know. So it's going to be very interesting. It'll be very volatile, not just between Democrats and Republicans, but within the Republican Party, too.
And I'm wondering, Professor, to that ending, you kind of read my mind here. I'm wondering now, you know, everybody will shake it out. They'll have drinks to excess over the weekend. And then when they're back next week, there's probably going to be some discussions behind closed doors, Professor, of Republicans saying, well, do we just en masse move away from Mr. Trump and understand we only have 24 months till we do this again for the White House? So I'm wondering, do you think it'll just take an en masse move to say, hey, you know what? We're past the midterms now. We passed another hurdle. We have some margin in the House, maybe a 50-50 Senate. Do we just cut bait here?
Well, that's going to be interesting to watch. You're going to have to watch whether the tail wags the dog. That is to say, whether the extreme MAGA wing of the Republican Party forces the Republican, what we believe will be the Republican majority in the House, whether that MAGA wing, extremist wing, wags the entire Republican dog in the House. Now, we've seen this movie before. When the Republicans had a majority under Republican Speaker Mr. Boehner, the Tea Party and the Freedom Caucus continuously challenged Boehner and forced him to do things that he did not want to do, and ultimately that proved disastrous for the Republican Party. We'll have to see what happens now, whether Kevin McCarthy, who wants to be the Speaker, whether he in fact does become the Speaker, and whether he has the spine, really, to control his members. I'm not too encouraged by that, given McCarthy's record in the past, but we'll have to see whether he really is in control of his party or whether he's going to have to drift in ways that he really would not be good, electorally speaking, for the Republicans going forward.
Final question, Professor. Speaker Pelosi, obviously, still recovering from the tragedy with her husband. Thank God he's going to be okay. Rather odd scenario there, but it's being investigated. She will likely soon not be majority leader anymore. Rumblings about her being the ambassador to the Vatican. Who do you see as a possible Democratic minority leader in the House if all the pieces fall in the way they should?
Well, you know, it's hard to know because, again, there are, you know, rifts within the Democratic caucus. There's a more progressive wing. There's the more moderate wing. I think the moderate wing really is much more dominant in the Democratic Party than the moderate wing is in the Republican Party. So I would expect a moderate to emerge. I don't know. There's talk about Hakeem Jeffries, who's in the leadership, as being a possible successor to Nancy Pelosi. You know, she may tip her hat also in favor of somebody that she likes. The top leadership, Pelosi herself, as well as Steny Hoyer, are aging politicians.
Yeah.
And so I think there'll be a definite move to look for younger leadership if Pelosi decides to step down. You know, she's in a delicate position. I think she understands that it's time to move on. I mean, she has accomplished, she's had a phenomenal career and has had two runs as Speaker that were very highly successful. So this is a good time to step down on a high note, so to speak. On the other hand, she doesn't want to step down and let the message go out that, you know, because her husband was attacked, she's afraid and scared the extremist wings that are, you know, that dominate some corners of the United States. So she's got to figure it out whether it's an appropriate time to step down politically and make room for new leadership, or whether this is a time to stand up and in some way fight extremism by, you know, carrying on. We'll have to see what she decides. I think ultimately she cares deeply about her family and about the health of her husband. So although there are political considerations here, I think ultimately what will prevail will be the personal considerations, and that will be what drives her political future.
Always a solid, fascinating material from Professor Alan Sanders, Professor Emeritus, St. Peter's University in Jersey City, and former Time Magazine senior reporter in D.C. Professor, good to chat with you. Take care. We'll chat down the road. Thanks.
All right. You take care.
Thanks, Professor Alan Sanders. There you go. Guy who's been there, covered all these interesting folk in D.C. and wound up his career in academia. See, nobody's asked me to be in academia. Wouldn't I be a great professor? I'd put on the tweed jacket with the elbow patches and the pipe. I'd look simply authoritative.